Welcome to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening today and for supporting public radio. 3 years ago, barely half of Spirit Airline flights took off on time. It had one of the worst on-time performance records among U.S. airlines. In February of this year, more than 8 out of 10 Spirit flights took off on time, making it one of the most reliable airlines, better than American, Southwest, and JetBlue, the three biggest carriers in and out of South Florida's airports. Spirit becoming more punctual is just one of the changes the company has undergone as it tacks away from its in-your-face, take-it-or-leave-it attitude toward its business model. The approach Spirit had used made no excuses for its ultra-low-cost, a la carte pricing airline business. The company grabbed attention with its racy and snarky ads through the years. There was its MILF ad, playing off a crude acronym involving moms.
We have our very famous MILF ad, Many Islands, Low Fares, and it's hotter and cheaper than ever.
That was Bobby Schroeder back in 2013 when he was vice president of consumer marketing for Spirit. Spirit once teased travelers to Fort Lauderdale to, quote, check out the oil on our beaches, even as the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill continued in the Gulf of Mexico. There was the Go South for VD promotion in 2011 for Valentine's Day. The ads helped the airline gain attention without having a big advertising budget, certainly, and they helped craft an image of Spirit as a play-by-its-own-rules airline. This is then-CEO Ben Baldanza describing the business strategy to a University of Chicago Booth School of Business audience back in 2015.
We are a disruptor, just like Uber is, right? And just like Spotify was. And disruptors create friction at first.
Spirit did plenty of that. It broke apart its ticket prices and charged extra for all kinds of things traditional airlines included, like printing boarding passes or onboard snacks, even water. Its planes were full, and it helped Spirit have one of the highest profit margins among U.S. airlines, but it consistently ranked among the worst for customer satisfaction. 3 years ago, Spirit had the second highest rate of customer complaints, according to data from the U.S. Department of Transportation. In February of this year, it had the highest rate of customer complaints, but the proportion of complaints was more than cut in half.
Over time, with good transparency, their models come to be understood and appreciated. And Spirit is on that path.
But former CEO Ben Baldanza no longer is on that path with Spirit. He abruptly left in early 2016, replaced by airline industry veteran Bob Fornaro. And late last year, the company announced President Ted Christie will become the new CEO early next year. Now, talking with Christie and Spirit's chief operating officer, John Benderitis, there's a common word they use these days to describe Spirit's new attitude.
This is a bit of an evolution for us, right?
The business is in constant evolution.
This is an evolution.
But now we're talking about a product evolution.
Being scrappy, being nimble, we're continuing to evolve.
The aggressive marketing style and caveat emptor philosophy has evolved now to the point of Spirit President Ted Christie this month publicly signing a pledge to do better by its customers. The airline is a major economic force in South Florida. It is the second largest carrier at Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. It's a top five employer in Broward County with more than 3,000 workers and is one of the largest South Florida companies with more than $2.5 billion in annual revenue. But you wouldn't know it by its headquarters in Miramar. It's tucked away in a light industrial neighborhood of low-slung office buildings. There's no grand sign proclaiming Spirit Airlines. Just a simple entrance with its logo above the double doors leading to a small reception and security check-in area. Spirit has built its business by competing on price, a focus it is not giving up on as it makes this very public shift toward addressing its past problems with customer service. We spoke about the change with two top executives leading the company's evolution, President Ted Christie and Chief Operating Officer John Benderitis, who goes by a nickname.
Benderitis is a long last name. It sounds like appendicitis, so Bendo just works.
All right, so it's Bendo. Spirit's invest in the guest effort is a break with its past take-it-or-leave-it attitude.
It's not just enough to be on time. It's not just enough to be clean. You know, it's really a value proposition. And so we are in a very competitive business, as you know. And, you know, one way that we can clearly differentiate ourselves is to be the best value brand that there is in the space.
The previous tack that Spirit had taken for several years was to kind of thumb the nose at the competition and just say the price is the price and that's what we're going to compete upon, not necessarily on service.
Yeah, that probably was the perception for sure. And I don't think that we, you know, we're in a world where we didn't care about the guest. We just didn't put enough focus and enough effort toward it. Because, you know, again, this is a competitive business. Fares are pretty transparent, right? And our guests shop for price. And when you have prices that are, you know, being pressured by the competition, you've got to have something to differentiate yourself.
Were you seeing, Ted, the economics of that previous attitude toward customer service begin to creep in, frankly, on the business?
Well, I think what we are seeing is, you know, I think Bendo mentioned it, the business is in constant evolution, and so the competitive space remains and always is extremely aggressive. And so what we saw is the airline getting bigger, expanding its reach, and it was just a chance for us to continue to move the messaging along, focused more and more on satisfaction and value. We've been a bit of a disruptor in the space. We've changed a lot in the airline business, and we think for the good, by the way, because we do deliver real value. And it was a chance for us to kind of both move the actual product and move the messaging in that direction.
How big of an evolution was this, though? Because as you were and still are a big disruptor. The way you published fares, the way you unlocked different prices, the way you talked about the kind of service that Spirit had, it invented in some regards the ultra low cost carrier. But now here's an ultra low cost carrier very plainly stating customer service matters.
Yeah, and again, I think Bendo said it. We've never not been focused on that. But as
some of the customers would argue with you there, long term customers. Bendo's smiling a little bit there.
I hear the point. And so while you're a young, developing business, as we were in the early part of this decade, or the earlier part of last decade even, you know, you're figuring out the business, you're starting to make the changes, and we've been growing rapidly over that period of time. And I think, you know, to be fair to the business, you know, we've been learning quite a bit from that. And so it's not shocking to say that we are in a learning mode, and we're always trying to get better. And I think that's the focus is, can we consistently improve? Can we make this product really valuable to the people buying tickets?
Let's talk about some of the specifics about this invest in guest strategy. You've talked about promises to improvements in booking and the check-in process. What can you tell us about what that means?
Yeah, so from an ease of use perspective, what we're trying to do is to reassure the guests on our airplane, and quite frankly, the people who haven't yet experienced it, is that we're going to make that whole process as seamless as possible. And what we know about the people that we fly every day is they generally skew more favorable towards less interaction and more technology. And so those people want to see it's easy and seamless to both book and buy a ticket, check in, drop your bag, get on board through security, and move your way through the process. And so all of our designs around technology in that regard, from the website redesign all the way through the kiosk and the self-bagging initiatives, bag tagging initiatives, are designed to make that process easier. And we think that drives satisfaction.
Does it mean fewer human interactions at the airport, at the gate?
It could. Because, again, if the guest demands that, that's the product we want to supply. And so from time to time, you may find that people simply do not want to interact and they want to make their way through to security. But we, of course, still provide, we will provide high quality guest satisfaction when people need someone's help.
You also talk about improvements with kind of the on-flight experience. One of the announcements that Spirit has talked about in this new initiative is training for flight attendants. I think it may come as a surprise that there wasn't training prior to this initiative, Bendo?
You know, Tom, we've had training certainly in place for forever here at Spirit, but our training was really focused on the technical aspects of the job and certainly the safety aspect of the flight attendant job. They are first and foremost first responders and safety professionals. Where we were lacking, frankly, is kind of on the soft side of the business, on some customer service skills, and also with everything that's going on in the business, de-escalation skills, right, on board the aircraft. Day after day, we see more reports of, you know, difficult situations on airlines, and so we wanted to make sure that, you know, our flight attendants were armed with tools, right? This is about building a toolkit and making sure that they had the right kind of training in place to focus on those kinds of things.
So is this the first effort that Spirit has had with that kind of hospitality training for their flight attendants?
It certainly is the first in this kind of expansion in terms of how much time we're putting towards it. It isn't that we didn't give some service training in the past. We just recognized that we were far short of what we really needed to have.
And how much of that was a response to what we've seen captured on social media videos of unruly passengers in some cases getting dragged off airplanes, or for that matter, on the flip side, flight attendants or check-in crews not appreciating necessarily a passenger's predicament fully?
Yeah, I think it was more of not that those items tipped the scale in a certain direction. We were headed in that direction anyway. It was good timing, right? If you're going to bring everybody in and start doing some soft skills training, we really kind of questioned ourselves, what else do they need in order to do their jobs properly? What other tools do they need? And certainly seeing all these reports indicated at us that they needed some more training in those areas to help work as a team, right? Try to de-escalate the situation and take care of the guests.
Can you give us a sense of what some of that training is going to manifest for your passenger? How are they going to experience it?
Yeah, well, hopefully it's seamless. They're going to continue to get the free smiles that we have on board.
you don't charge extra for those.
We don't. And friendly is important, right? And we allow our flight attendants and our pilots and really everybody who works as a team member at Spirit to kind of bring their individuality, bring their personality, and take care of folks, right? This is really what we want to have happen. When we get into those situations, on the airplane that may require some of these other tools that we've taught, again, that too should be seamless. We're just looking for a very professional interaction, right? Very calm approach to handling difficult situations because, every day we're carrying thousands, tens of thousands of our guests, and we want to make sure that they have the best experience possible.
Spirit Airlines Chief Operating Officer John Benderitis speaking with us along with President Ted Christie. Still to come as our conversation continues, the evolution of Spirit Airlines while it aims to remain the low-price competitor in the industry.
Yes, we had to reinvent the airline business a little bit early on in the company's model, and now what we're doing is taking that opportunity and moving it forward. And that's part of who we are.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. No company wants to compete on price alone, but Spirit Airlines built its business on price. At a time when the average airfare in the United States is close to $350, Spirit's average fare per passenger flight segment is a little over $50. So even if a passenger has a connecting flight and buys a round-trip ticket, Spirit's bare-bones fare remains well below the industry average. The airline's price strategy has fueled its growth. It's among the top 10 air carriers in the country now based on the number of people flying on its planes. In March, about one out of every five people flying through the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport flew on a Spirit flight. For years, the airline ranked among the lowest in customer satisfaction, though, with complaints about flight delays, the lack of in-flight services, and cramped and uncomfortable seats. The airline says it's evolving its business strategy as it matures as a company. We spoke with John Benderitis, Chief Operating Officer, and President Ted Christie inside a conference room at Spirit headquarters in Miramar about how it's changing while still hoping to grow.
Being scrappy and being nimble is a part of being a good operator in our view, and that will continue. But now we're talking about a product evolution, which includes, high-quality guest experience, onboard experience. We think providing, for example, Wi-Fi as an option to our guests is going to improve their satisfaction. A seamless booking and online experience, all of those kind of things, drives a lot of value. And so, yes, we had to reinvent the airline business a little bit early on in the company's model. And now what we're doing is taking that opportunity and moving it forward. And that's part of who we are. Being scrappy, being nimble, we're continuing to evolve.
How does that evolution continue on the main product, on the fare product, which Spirit has built its business of decoupling that fare from the cost to fly somewhere compared to all the other amenities and ancillary services, essentially, that the legacy airlines include?
Well, we think one of the best things we provide is low fares, right? And that's a great place to start.
Which is a relative term, of course.
Of course, yeah. But our model is driven around the concept that we can stimulate more people to travel. And you do that economically through lower base fares or lower total cost of travel. And so the model is actually quite accretive to the business because it actually improves or it increases the total number of travelers every day. And the ancillary component of that actually contributes to that because people only pay for what they use. And that means if you're a slim down traveler, you're going to have a very low total cost and you may do it more frequently. So that's going to remain who we are. That will be a key component is low fares driven with low costs, we think, is generally beneficial to economic throughput. And the trends, by the way, are fantastic already today. Just based on the operational performance of the airline, we're seeing dramatic improvement in overall satisfaction, and we can measure that because of the way people interact with us with their own survey data. So we also intend to see benefits from some of these programs, quite frankly, in the way the company operates from an efficiency standpoint. So the more seamless the experience is for the guest, it's actually beneficial to us too. And we will see that in operational performance and cost performance because it's easier to interact.
Curious about how Spirit's going to measure this because on the publicly available customer satisfaction surveys, which both of you gentlemen are very familiar with, for years, Spirit didn't do so well. It was usually ranked among the lowest of customer service satisfaction for all airlines. It's begun to increase in those surveys. It's up from the bottom, but still in the lower 50%. Is this effort that Spirit is undergoing concentrated on changing that relationship?
Yeah, I think absolutely, right? This is an evolution, and so we're not going to rest. You know, this is not about, you know, performance over the last month or the last 6 months. You know, this is about consistent performance over a long period of time. And true success will be, right, when we have that year after year and people can become, you know, used to and can rely on the experience that they have with us. So that's everything from when they first buy that ticket to how they check in to how they interact with our agents and our flight attendants to all the way to the end of the trip. You know, the flight attendants are only, you know, they are an important part of our team, but they're one part of our team. And so this same effort to educate about the guest and to educate on the soft skills side of the house, that's going to be continuing this year with all of our airport agents and actually all of our pilots and all of our technicians and everybody in the entire company.
I've been with the company now 6 years. Bendo's been with the company a little over four. And, you know, we're extremely proud of the product we provide because we know we provide a valuable good to those people who otherwise couldn't afford to travel. And I think the public perception of that wasn't necessarily lining up with what we knew we could deliver. It started initially as let's make the operation run better and see what happens next, and it's continued to follow from there.
It has been a real sea change in Spirit's kind of brand in the public eye, which was driven by price, and a real sea change in how Spirit views itself compared to, I think, what the outside view was how Spirit looked at itself as, again, this kind of upstart, almost a teenager type attitude in the legacy airline industry.
Yeah, that's interesting. This is really about reputation and pride at the end of the day, right? And we want, you know, our guests to feel that pride that we take in ourselves and the product that we offer. And you're right, you correctly point out that we weren't always, you know, where we wanted to be in terms of how we ranked against other airlines, but we knew we were fully capable of doing that. And so as we have progressed, we've seen that pride build. And, you know, Ted pointed out, you know, correctly also that when you run a great airline, right, it's more efficient and it's, you know, it's better for our guests and it's better for us, but it also builds a lot of pride. And that pride starts to spill over into everything that we do. And we think about the airline that was always known for being financially successful and having low fares, continuing to be financially successful and having low fares, but also being one of the most consistently reliable airlines for guests with great friendly service and that ease of transaction, right? I mean, who doesn't like, you know, putting their boarding pass on their telephone and cruising through the airport, you know, in the most expedient way possible?
5-6 years or so ago, the marketing effort for Spirit was risque at worst, perhaps cheeky at best. Are those days over?
part of this maturation and evolution is we want to make sure that we're aligning the product delivery with the product's reputation. And so while at that time there was some value in getting our name out there because we were young and small and we attempted to outpunch our weight class from a marketing perspective, and making sure people just saw us, to be honest. And so maybe that was a bit cheeky from time to time. But now we're much bigger where we fly. And I think we can rely on the laurels of just a good quality business and making sure we're delivering value from a fair perspective. That's going to be the focus.
When you saw those customer service rankings back many years ago, or even that kind of marketing message that was out there, doesn't sound like that stuff is... are things to be very proud of right now?
You know, like anything, you know, the history is the history, and you know, and it's well documented. But I think about, you know, where we're headed going forward, and that's what's really important to me, and it's important to the team. We want to be known again as that great value airline that gives me a great price. They're always friendly. They're always on time. They're clean. They get me there. They get my bags there. You know, that's really what we're building toward, and we work hard at it every day, and it never stops.
Taking an extremely expensive good and turning it into more of a common commodity is something we're extremely proud of.
Seat density is a phrase that Spirit uses in order to describe kind of how many seats are in a cabin. Is there more that can be done, in your estimation, of the design of the cabin to increase seat density?
Well, there's always, there has been over the last, gosh, I've been in this business now 16, 17 years. There have been new inventions or new technologies that have made cabin redesign and, quite frankly, comfort on the cabin more accessible even to low-cost carriers, be it the physical location of laboratories on the airplane or seat technology and slimline seating and the design, the physical design of the contour of the seat matters a lot to guests on the airplane. They feel more comfortable, and I think that continues to move. To be honest, it's a fixed footprint of available real estate, and so what we've tried to mix is creating a density that can drive real value from a low cost perspective, so we can carry more people at lower fares. It's a carpool, right? If you want to think about it that way, and so we think that that's beneficial. But at some point, you just run it. The tube is as big as it is.
Are we at that spot though? That Spirit is running out of seat pitch to narrow and seat sizes to narrow?
I think you're starting to reach, you know, just pure engineering limitations. I don't know that there's a lot more room to squeeze more and more seating in the airplane.
Spirit Airlines President Ted Christie speaking with us, along with Chief Operating Officer John Benderitis. Still to come as our conversation continues, balancing these changes at Spirit with business results in South Florida, including higher oil prices and higher airfares.
We're already seeing the initial phases of changes as a result of $70 a barrel.
This is the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. You can always find a podcast of our program. Go to your favorite podcast app, search Sunshine Economy, and look for the audio. You can also follow us along on social media at WLRN is our handle on Twitter. We're on the eve of peak air travel season, the summertime. And this year it comes with oil prices at 3.5-year highs. It's a dynamic all airlines have to deal with as they try to balance competitiveness with cost. Last month, the South Florida-based Spirit Airlines announced a $3 fare increase. May not seem like much, but as the leader in the ultra-low-cost air carrier market, it represents more than a 5% price hike over Spirit's average per-flight airfare. The higher oil price also means Spirit expects to grow slightly slower than first anticipated. Airlines talk about capacity, seats they have available to sell. Grow too much and it could mean lower prices. Don't grow enough and it could mean missed business. It's supply and demand, after all. These business challenges come as Spirit works to improve its customer service challenges. For years, the company has been known for its low fares and a la carte pricing, where passengers pay extra for everything from getting a boarding pass at the airport to water on board the plane. And while its business grew, its reputation for bad customer service grew as well. But Spirit says it's been working quietly to improve its on-time flight performance and better train its employees to deal with passenger troubles. And President Ted Christie says they've balanced the investment needed with its low-cost price model, even as oil prices are rising.
We actually were able to do it and keep the cost structure consistent and the economic results consistent. And that's been the real win.
The costs have gone up, double-digit costs, I think, year over year on a quarterly basis, though.
I think you may be referring to costs including fuel, and we have seen a massive...
Airplanes need that, as far as I think. Okay.
Yeah. and you're right, because airlines, one thing, they look at their costs with and without fuel, because because conveniently we can't control it as much. And so we tend to focus more on how are our unit costs doing excluding fuel. But you're right, we see significant inflation in fuel. And again, that's another reason to run a better airline, because you need less gas.
In the last quarter, fuel costs trumped salary and compensation and pay. Do you expect that to continue? I mean, how is Spirit dealing with $70 a barrel oil?
Well, you know, I mean, it's an added challenge to an already challenging business, but the airline business has seen over the last 10 years everything from $30 a barrel to $150 a barrel, and we as an industry have adapted to that. And I think what you'll expect is that Spirit will continue to adapt, our competitors will continue to adapt, and we do that in a variety of ways with pricing techniques, with capacity deployment, and then fuel conservation initiatives as well. And so, you know, we're already seeing the initial phases of, you know, changes as a result of $70 a barrel.
Such as?
So for us, at our last earnings call, we talked about the fact that we'll probably grow a little bit less in the fourth quarter than we may have anticipated before. And that's largely a result of the stage length, what we call the length of haul. And that means that longer flying tends to be slightly less beneficial when you have high variable expenses like fuel. So that drives a little bit less capacity. We've also made some pricing decisions where we knew where we had to raise fares slightly to compensate. And I'm seeing, you know, our competitors doing the same thing.
I want to ask you about that. It was in April, I think you announced a $3 fare increase. That has stuck so far. Do you expect that to perhaps be the limit of the fare increases as we move in to the summer, late summer and early fall booking season?
Well, I think especially as you head into the peak, which is the summer period, airlines are going to try to drive revenue where they believe they can. And when you have a lot of demand, that helps quite a bit. And so our competitors have done some of those similar moves. I think you may see more of that as you head into the peak. But you know, fare increases are dynamic. They get competed away, they get raised from time to time, and that's just part of the industry.
So for now, that $3 fare base fare increase is stuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were other people largely raised their fare structures along with ours, but that doesn't always happen, and sometimes you see them move up and down depending on that.
One of the other ways to deal with the higher fuel costs is to deal with capacity, to fly less, not only shorter routes, but just to put fewer airplanes in the air. Any expectation to do that? That can also drive the supply to help that pricing power.
We already are making some tweaks to the back half of the year where we're going to have a little bit less flying than we originally anticipated, maybe going into next year as well. And we're seeing some of our competitors to do the same. And that's one way you can kind of adapt to higher input costs, is you can constrict the marginal capacity that maybe is not as profitable as it used to be.
Let me ask you about the makeup of revenue now, because more than 50% of your passenger revenue is made up by money that passengers spend on things other than their seat. Is that a growth trajectory that you see continuing to grow? Are you able to extract a higher percentage of that overall passenger revenue from things other than the ticket, the base fare itself?
Well, percentages can be dangerous because you can arrive at the answer you want maybe the wrong way. So the first way to talk about it is how much revenue are we driving per passenger? And our ancillary production today is amongst the best in the world.
It's about $55, I think, in the last quarter.
That's correct. And we're targeting that as a full year number for this year, which would put us, you know, back at our peak level. And the great thing about ancillaries, it's products people are buying. They're making the choice to buy it. And that means it's driving value for them, and it's affording us the ability to compete aggressively on the fair.
These are things like baggage fees, overhead fees, paper ticket if you want, bigger seat, all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. Shortcut security. There's a variety of different things. Our own credit card drives, affinity card drives some value. We have something that's somewhat unique in the business called the $9 Fare Club, which gives people who frequently travel on Spirit the ability to get discounts, but they pay us a membership fee. So all of those things help drive ancillary revenue, but also help us compete on the fair.
But are you at a limit of those? If you're at $55, which is slightly more than half of what you're collecting overall from passengers, is there still room to grow that?
We do believe there is room to grow.
Wi-Fi is one of those, perhaps?
I think it'll be a contributor. I think our ability to more optimally price each individual product based on the demand for that product is going to help us quite a bit.
So let me pick that apart here a little bit, Ted, about what you're saying there. When you say optimally price based upon demand, what I'm hearing is that the overhead bin charge on a flight to Latrobe, Pennsylvania, maybe less than the overhead bin charge on a flight to Las Vegas, because there's more people demanding that overhead bin on the flight to Las Vegas compared to Central Pennsylvania. Is that fair?
I think that's the concept is correct. That's right. And it's not dissimilar from the way airline tickets are priced today, right? So airline tickets are extremely affordable in the month of September when no one's traveling, and they're very expensive in the month of July. And that concept may be more applicable to seat assignments and bag fees than they are today. Again, this is a bit of an experiment for us as we work our way through it.
Is that a technology-based solution? I mean, how are you going to try to capture the nuance of each of those individual market segments or passenger desires?
Yeah, there's a little bit of technology there in understanding the demand for each individual product and how can we best forecast that and match the supply with that demand. And so that's both collecting data and having human talent evaluate that data and price. Because again, the prices have to be optimized for the demand, which means in some cases, we may in fact be overcharging today in certain markets at certain times. And so the more we learn about that, the better we're going to be optimally priced for that clearing price.
Speaking with Spirit Airlines President Ted Christie inside the company's Miramar headquarters. Our conversation continues, and still to come, it turns toward labor relations. After 2 years of troublesome talks with its pilots union, the two sides have a new deal.
It was an expensive, kind of generational deal for Spirit, but I think it brings our pilots more in line with the industry and allows us to run an airline that we know we can execute well over the next 5+ years.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. When you arrive at Spirit Airlines corporate headquarters in Miramar, you check in with security and give them your driver's license. They hold on to it until you leave. There are just 2 seats in the waiting area right inside the main entrance. As employees and others are coming and going, a video monitor plays corporate videos featuring places Spirit flies and other feel-good stories about the company. Included in the reel is a video podcast from Chief Operating Officer John Benderitis. It's called Bendo's Podcast, after his nickname.
Hey everybody, it's Bendo, and welcome to our monthly podcast.
In his March message, Bendo started with the newly signed labor contract with Spirit's Pilots Union. The deal comes after almost 2 years of talks, which included the company suing its own pilots union over a work slowdown that cost the company $45 million. But the two sides now have a 5-year deal. It was a year ago this month when hundreds of Spirit flights across the country had to be canceled, including several at the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. The airline blamed a, quote, pervasive illegal work slowdown by its pilots union. It led to chaos like this in Fort Lauderdale and caught on social media. The union denied Spirit's accusations, but a federal court intervened and ordered pilots back to work. The new pilots deal cost Spirit $81 million in the first quarter for a ratification bonus paid to its union pilots. It also brings pilots pay hikes and more company contributions to their retirement plans. It also comes as Spirit has experienced improvements to the on-time performance of its flights and once rock-bottom customer satisfaction rankings. So this is where we picked up our conversation with Spirit President Ted Christie and Chief Operating Officer John Benderitis.
In difficult negotiations like that, sometimes things can get, pretty contentious, and there's, emotions that come into play and everything else. But at the end of the day, once you get through those things, and we always remain professional throughout the process to the best of our ability for sure, we've got a great opportunity here with a new agreement in place. We think this is a place for pilots to have a career, not to just come for a while and move to someplace else. And so we're focused on building that relationship. It's really important to us.
What's the impact on the cost structure? The press that's been available about this deal with the pilots union has talked about an average of a 43% pay increase on the date of the signing, double-digit direct contributions to pilots' retirement plans, and this $75 to $80 million ratification bonus.
All I'll say, and then I'll turn it over to Ted, is yes, it was a significant increase, and those are the correct numbers. And it was an expensive deal from a company perspective, but given what's taken place in the market for pilots and within the industry and all the changes as of late, this was a move toward trying to be competitive with the other contracts that are out there. I'll let Ted speak directly to, part of our job in the management team, right, is to take all these various inputs, whether it's increasing pilot costs or increasing fuel or, landing fees or whatever it might be. Our job is to do other actions to help offset that to the degree possible. So,
yeah, I mean, look, Bendo hit you guys both have the data correct. What we had to work with the union in exchange for that is to create an agreement that allowed us to run an airline that was reliable, that was scalable. And so we collectively with the union came up with some ways that we think are going to make the airline just generally more efficient. And so so that, coupled with a number of other ways for us to be creative in continuing to manage our cost structure, means we're still going to deliver upon a down unit cost year ex fuel again. But importantly, that's the way the manage those. We know those are the things that management can influence. And so. It was an expensive, kind of generational deal for Spirit, but I think it brings our pilots more in line with the industry and allows us to run an airline that we know we can execute well over the next 5+ years.
Are you crediting the labor deal with the pilots for any part of the improvement of the on-time performance over the past couple of years?
Well, I think as of yet, we haven't yet seen the benefit, right? It's still a brand new agreement for us, and we're going to learn a little bit from it as we move forward.
Could it add to that?
We're hopeful, yes, absolutely, that the airline will be more efficient and more productive as we implement some of the benefits that we hope to achieve.
Bendo, I want you to expand upon that. I was in the lobby and I saw your monthly podcast, the video version now.
It's a brand new beginning for us and it's really going to be great. The contract also gives us the opportunity to run a much better operation for our guests.
Hang some more detail on that for me.
Sure. So let's take something very simple because your listeners are sure are travelers and, they're well aware of things happen in this business, whether that's a weather-related event or some sort of mechanical event. And so for that reason, all airlines have reserve crew members. And one of the things that we were able to address is better utilization of those reserve crew members, a significant better utilization, so that when we do have those disruptions, we have somebody readily available to step in and be able to take that flight, provided if it's weather, we can't leave when it's bad weather. But if we can switch the airplane and we have a crew, that's that's really important, right? So it's one thing to have reserves, and you know, there's a lot of rules, and you know, there's probably 25 pages on scheduling and how pilots can be used. But
and some of those are federal regulations.
Oh yes, for sure. We absolutely comply with all the federal regulations. They're there for a very important reason, right? And it's for everybody's safety and to make sure that, you know, pilots get adequate rest and so forth. And so yeah, we never violate those kinds of things. But in between all of that, there certainly are opportunities where we can do a little bit better in rescheduling folks.
So how did that change? How has that changed with the new pilots deal?
It's as Ted said, we're just starting to kind of roll it out. You know, we've got an agreement with our union partners to kind of do some baby steps here and start to implement these rules. A lot of them did go into effect when we signed the agreement on March 1st. Some more will go into effect as we kind of go along the path here. And it's really a bit of learning on both sides because it's different for them as well, right? And so because the relationship is important, we want to make sure that we're doing this together and that we're, you know, implementing the rules as we both agreed to in the contract. So it's off and running, and I'd say we're off to a really great start.
Given some of the friction that happened a year or so ago, how did you talk to the union about those kinds of actions, those kinds of work actions, and whether or not the union retains the ability to do that again?
Well, I mean, this is a little bit of a tricky area, frankly. I mean, you know, the union would not, first of all, I think it'd be okay with me saying they would not agree that they had anything to do with anything that happened in May of last year. However, having said that, it's very public that we took our pilots to court and we were, you know, able to get a temporary restraining order granted. And so, you know, setting that aside, however those actions occurred, what was important was to get past them.
Ted, what does this pilot's deal mean for other labor unions that Spirit is involved with?
Well, we, you know, for the unions that we have on the property today, you know, we've reached agreements with all of them, and one of them, you know, soon to be, you know, up for renegotiation. But each of them are individual contracts. They all behave separately. They're all independent. And so we, you know, our objective here is to create, you know, a little bit of make it a little more routine, right? That the company's moving through its growth process. It does, as part of that, have to make sure that it's always renegotiating and renewing its agreements with its labor force. And I think that's part of the maturation phase.
So when you describe the labor deal with the pilots as bringing the pilots of Spirit more in line with the broader industry, could other collective bargaining units that represent Spirit employees expect that same kind of movement toward coming in line with other standard industry practices?
I would say what's important in that question is each group that Ted just described, they have different goals, right? And not all of them are focused in the same area. So flexibility in work life might be more important, you know, to a particular group, whereas maximizing pay is more important to another group, whereas another group may be focused more on medical insurance. And so at the end of the day, it's a big economic equation, and we don't, you know, dictate to the various groups where their interests lie. We're listeners in that case. And so I wouldn't at all, you know, insinuate that, you know, because of this deal and where the pilots had their focus, that's going to be the same focus as everybody else. And we're just going to take them one at a time, as Ted says, and do our best to work together to find a solution that works for both parties.
John Benderitis is the chief operator and officer at Spirit Airlines. The company has four employee unions altogether. In addition to its pilots union, the airline's 3,000 flight attendants are unionized. Some ramp workers at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport belong to a union, and a few dozen of Spirit's flight dispatchers are also represented by organized labor. Still to come, the coming change at the top for Spirit.
As we grow, we're focused and we'll be continue to focused on building a business model that people like.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. In 2019, Spirit Airlines in Miramar will have a new CEO. He already is the number two guy at the company. This succession planning for the publicly traded company is a lot different than the last time it got a new boss. Ben Baldanza left the company in early 2016. From the outside, it appeared the departure was sudden, especially given how public Baldanza had been in defending Spirit's ultra-low-cost airfare business model in the face of really low customer satisfaction rankings. Ted Christie was chief financial officer during the last 4 years of Baldanza's tenure. He's since added the president title and has been named the incoming CEO in 2019 when current CEO Bob Fornaro steps down.
Well, the evolution continues, and I think as we grow, we're focused and we'll be continue to focused on building a business model that people like. That mix between choice and fare is important, and an ever-evolving network allows us to drive high guest satisfaction.
The mention of customer satisfaction represents the continued move away from the in-your-face, take-it-or-leave-it playbook of a decade ago. That transition really took root under current CEO Fornaro. When I asked Christie what the Spirit board was looking for in a new CEO, he suggested the more button-down style of Spirit's current CEO would continue.
This business is it's a high output, high octane operating business, and they want people that can fix problems, that can dig in and be energized, that are competitive and like to win, but at the same time acknowledge we made a mistake and it's time to fix it.
Has the airline industry suffered over the years because of a lack of humility? And I think back to the social media stuff that we're seeing. We think back about executive reaction to passenger complaints, even at Legacy Airlines. Has there been this lack of humility, and has it come from a place of, well, you know, if people are going to travel, they're going to pay for the pleasure to sit in these seats?
You know, I'm not sure that I would necessarily call it that. We're an extremely visible and high-volume business, and air travel can be a stressful thing for people who are not used to it, and that means it can drive emotion.
In the meantime, the economics of Spirit's home region are strong. The unemployment rate in South Florida in April was 3.7%. It's even lower in Spirit's home county of Broward, where unemployment was 3.2% last month. Almost down to the low unemployment rate just before the housing market began cracking and the Great Recession began to take hold a little bit more than a decade ago.
South Florida is doing extremely well. I would say that, and I would speak broadly about Florida in general. We are, you know, we're clearly South Florida's hometown airline, but we're also, you know, we're Florida's airline. We're big in Orlando. We're big in Fort Myers. We're big in Tampa. And so we would say that the marketplace is going extremely well in Florida. And I would say that's true nationwide, that we're seeing good demand, and that sort of thing. So the climate here is good. That also means the demand for employees is good. And so we're finding that to be competitive.
You're operating in a county, in Broward County, which has one of the lowest unemployment rates of all of Florida.
I'm not at all surprised to hear that statistic, given what we, you know, we're a growing airline, we're a growing business, so we're always competing for new talent, and we see that day to day.
The president and incoming CEO as of 2019 of Spirit Airlines, Ted Christie. The company employs just over 3,000 people in South Florida. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. At WLRN is our Twitter handle, where you can get all the latest news and information. And you can look for a podcast of this program and catch up on all of our previous programs by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting Public Radio.